From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois' state government and politics.
Well, Donald Trump ordering tariffs to take effect this week against Illinois' top trading partners. Then he pulled them back, at least temporarily. It's been like a yo-yo, and the administration's lack of clarity making it hard for government and businesses to plan ahead. Also, a new revenue estimate says Illinois government could have less money available than the governor indicated for the next state budget. We'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, professor emeritus and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week is Greg Hines with Crane Chicago Business. And Greg, it's always good to have you back with us.
Nice to be here, guys.
And Greg, I'll start with you. You cover government. You also cover the business community. And I have to think this is a difficult time for both to figure out where things are headed. Donald Trump has said we may have some short-term pain for long-term gain, but it's hard to peer into the future and see where things are headed. So let's just start with businesses. How are they feeling right now?
Not very happy, Sean, and frankly, neither should the consumers feel very happy as we record this. The stock market is taking another big hit. That'll come as welcome news to anybody who has an IRA or a 401k. And the core reason is that business likes certainty, above all. It can deal with bad news. It can deal with unexpected developments. They have to be able to plan for it. And unfortunately for business, Trump's handling of this terrorist issue, whatever the merits of it, is about as sure-handed and confident as a 14-year-old boy trying to ask a girl out on a date. I mean, he just doesn't know what he's doing. They're on, they're off, they're partially on. There's been at least five different combinations in the last week or so. And put yourself in the position of, say you own a few hundred acres around Peoria, and you're getting ready in a couple months to plant. Are you going to plant corn? Well, if you do, Illinois' top exporter for corn is Canada, is Mexico. Are you going to do beans instead? Well, maybe not, because Trump is also talking about putting tariffs on other countries that would buy Illinois agricultural products. You know, the same is true in the industrial sector. If you're running another example, say you own a small muffler manufacturing plant somewhere up around Rockford. If you do, though, you get component parts like everybody in the automobile industry from all over the place. Like maybe the shell of the thing, maybe it may not have aluminum. Where do you think we get most of our aluminum? We get it up in Canada. Trump is not wrong in saying that this country has lost too much industry over the last 50 years, that too many things we used to make, we instead rely on other people. But you can't just wave a magic wand and say, well, you're going to, you know, everybody bring it back in the next 25 minutes, or I'm going to hit you with a big charge. I'm going to import it. It just doesn't work that way. It creates distortions and pain, and according to the overwhelming consensus among economists, if these full tariffs come into effect, and there's supposed to be another round next week, and then another big round in early April. If they come into effect, it's going to be raise prices. It's going to force inflation up. For crying out loud, everybody knows what's happened to the price of gasoline. The pump has started to go back again. Well, one of the things that happened is we have this new 10% tax on oil that we're getting from Canada. If we don't get the oil, what are Midwestern refinery plants going to do? Because our refiners are technologically, they're built to handle the kind of heavy crude that comes by pipelines from Canada. They can't just switch to lighter crude that would come up from Texas. How you planning all that is a good question. People are scratching their heads, and when people scratch their heads, they don't do anything, and that tends to freeze the economy.
Yeah, and Charlie, we've talked about the impact this has on governments as well. I mean, here's the state trying to put a budget together for next year, and you know, right now, I believe just recently, the Pritzker administration saying they thought they're going to have pretty good tax proceeds coming in this spring. You know, income taxes. It was a good year as far as people working and unemployment was low. Good year for the stock market. That often equates to better tax revenue for the state of Illinois and for other states. So here you are trying to figure this out, but you're not sure, almost not just week to week, but even day to day, what the future holds. So it's just a tough time right now.
Yeah, it is. And particularly for the agriculture sector, because we're the nation's second leading exporter of both soybeans and feed grains. And roughly 44% of the grain we produce in Illinois, we sell it for export. Now, Trump is putting tariffs, and our trade partners are going to retaliate. And so suddenly it's going to be harder for us to sell our grain because it's going to cost more in where we want to sell it. And the notion that we can suddenly relocate all the manufacturing that's no longer done here, I think is just lunatic, in the sense that there's been a very, I guess the word for it would be very integrated supply chain in terms of, for example, automobiles. There's some models of cars where the constituent parts will cross international boundaries maybe 6-7 times. Some of the stuff is made in Mexico. Parts are shipped up here. Stuff is done to them, then further down to Mexico and back and forth, the assembly. And part of the reason is that the car companies know that in Mexico, labor is cheaper than it is here. And by the same token, people who need lumber know that you can get lumber cheaper and in larger volumes from Canada than you can from here. So in a sense, the North American free trade agreements that we've had have benefited all the countries. You have the cheaper labor in Mexico, you have more resources in Canada, and you have the skill in the U.S. And the notion that we're suddenly going to become an island where we don't have to import anything, I think is, as I said earlier, I think it's lunatic, and it just doesn't recognize the reality of the situation. I think a couple of weeks ago, I mentioned I'd like to see where we're going to start growing avocados big time or coffee beans big time in the U.S. And I think all the economists agree that this is going to cost consumers more money, and it's not going to be the windfall that the current president believes it will be.
Go ahead, Greg. I think you wanted to get in there.
I think, Charlie, I think you'd be a great avocado farmer. Just have to make it a little, bring a little more hot air down there. What I think is particularly notable is that the Wall Street Journal editorial page, which is about as conservative as you get, has just whacked Trump over this issue. It says it is a matter of practical economics. It doesn't make sense. You know, it is a matter of practical real-life politics. It doesn't make sense. I mean, Canada, for crying out loud, of all the lists of evil players in the world, Trump has to go after Canada. That we actually, if you take oil out of the equation, we actually run a trade surplus with them. We sell more to them than they sell to us. I agree with Charlie. This is not a good situation, and nobody seems to know where it goes. I mean, there is a theory that Trump is, you know, trying to use some of this as leverage and bargaining tactics and whatever. But the more he flips flops and goes back and forth, the more it appears that it's not a tactic but just confusion.
So, Greg, I'm going to put you on the spot. I guess, where do you see this possibly leading? I mean, are we, because Trump's certainly hearing from the business community, and he's certainly going to be hearing from members of Congress who are hearing from their constituents. And if prices start going up, that's not a good thing either for people, and certainly not for politicians. So do you think this is going to play out a certain way here over the next several weeks or months?
I think that is still very much up in the air. Trump is a stubborn fellow, and once he decides he wants to do something, he tends to do it, particularly since he now has kind of an echo chamber administration. All the elder statesmen who might spew at him and wave him off and say, boss, you don't really want to do that, seem to mostly be gone. But at the same time, he is a politician. He one way or another, sticks his finger up into the wind and see which way it's blowing. He definitely follows the stock market. All that may force him to attack and try to find a way to declare victory with something partial. And that is all of the, you know, that's always true. At any point in any of these negotiations, you get a little bit and you hold a big press conference and say, look at what we got. It's wonderful. Big victory for America. We don't need the tariffs anymore. On the other hand, his fiscal policy seems very much rooted back in two centuries ago. I mean, I don't think it's a mistake he talks about William McKinley all the time. That was before we had an income tax. That's when the country paid its bills with tariffs. If that's really his intent, boy, I don't know how we get there, because I don't know anybody that thinks that you can pay for garbages with tariffs anymore. But at the same time, notably, that he's trying to impose these tariffs, he's cutting the staff of the Internal Revenue Service left and right, and crippling their ability to enforce the laws. Eventually, that's going to result in reduced collections. So anything is possible here. There's ways to pressure him, but I think all his instincts want to go the other way.
Well, speaking of go ahead, Charlie.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, I would tend to agree with Greg that at some point the president is just going to declare victory, because he's now postponed the tariffs again, I believe, until April. And at that point, he'll see what's happening with the stock market. He'll see what's happening with business leaders, and he'll decide, okay, when I declared these tariffs, the reason was to cut down on the fentanyl and also the illegal crossings. Well, border crossings are really down, and fentanyl is really down, and so they've achieved their purpose. So now we'll do away with the tariffs, and we'll go back to the way it was before. So there's an opportunity for him to backtrack on what I believe, and I'm no economist, but a lot of economists believe, and as Greg said, the Wall Street Journal believes, is a dumb thing to do. He'll be able to backtrack, declare victory, and move on.
Well, Charlie, let's stay with this uncertainty theme, because at the state level now, we are just a couple of months, a little bit more, to trying to get a new state budget ironed out. The end of May is when they hope to pass that. Governor, of course, delivered his budget address recently, and we talked about it on this show. You said that if you add the numbers up in that budget, looks to be balanced. But now the Illinois legislature's fiscal forecasting arm, the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, came out with its revenue estimate for the next year, and it's much lower than what the governor's budget office had predicted, meaning that state could have a lot less money, if you believe that estimate, to spend than what the governor had indicated. I wanted to get your thoughts on this as somebody who follows the budget-making process.
The commission report says that based on the current law, the FY26 general revenue funds general fund's revenue total is roughly $54.2 billion. That's their estimate. And it's $1.2 billion less than what Gombe's budget book forecast was. But if you take out the proposed revenue changes that the governor has suggested, the difference between the two forecasts comes out to $737 million. And it's noteworthy, but the commission says it's still a difference of only 1.3%. And in explaining its new estimate, the commission said that it's not as optimistic as Gombe for some of the economically tied resources, such as the sales tax and the income tax. And I'm quoting here, "At this time, the commission feels that a more cautious approach is warranted given the economic uncertainties related to the current volatile geopolitical climate, potential tariffs, changes in the federal workforce, and outcomes of other potential policy changes at the federal level." And I might note that Governor Pritzker has been railing, if you will, at the federal government for roughly $2 billion that has been held up by the freeze that Illinois is entitled to. And so that's the kind of thing, you don't know what's going to happen. And the difficulty, as the commission says, I think very, what would you say, genteelly, is you don't know what's going to happen in Washington. You don't know what kind of cuts are going to be made to Medicaid and other human services programs for the Republicans to be able to fund their tax initiatives. And on top of that, you have Donald Trump, who is a very vindictive person and who likes to retaliate and get even. And Pritzker has been one of his biggest critics. So Illinois has to really be in the target zone for what Donald Trump and his minions would like to do to punish us. And so that makes this, as I've said before, this is probably the most uncertain budget year that I've seen, and I've been watching this stuff since the days of Dick Ogilvie.
Well, Greg, this this revenue estimate, it is quite a decent gap. Like Charlie said, it's a small percentage, but it's still a lot of money, and more so, they're usually a lot tighter than this. The Republicans have said that the governor may have been using some fuzzy math, as they called it, to make his budget seem balanced or possibly to set up for a tax hike at some point. I won't say that he did anything intentional here, but again, it's a pretty big gap. Do you foresee that the governor's office or lawmakers may have to consider some other revenue enhancements, like a more broader tax increase to try to get things under control?
Well, I do think there is a real possibility, Sean, that they're going to have to do something. I don't think this governor wants to raise taxes right now in any serious way. If he's if he wants to be considered a potential candidate for president on the Democratic side, passing a big tax increase just before you declare your candidacy is not the formula to get middle America to vote for you. I do think the Republicans are right to the extent that there's questions about the reliability of some of the math the governor has employed. If you remember, in late fall, the governor's budget office put out some projections saying, "Oh my goodness, we have this huge more than $2 billion hole." Then, "Oh my goodness, how are we going to deal with that?" And then they magically over two months, the hole disappeared. They said, "Well, revenue projection is a little bit better, and we can take a little one-time money from here from the road fund and do some other stuff to close it." But I think that the watchdog, the legislative watchdog here, is correct to question the reliability of all that. If in addition to that, the feds really whack at Medicaid in a way that that some people fear they would, that would really make this difficult. So then the question comes, what do you do about it? Like I said, I don't think this governor is going to be inclined to back a tax increase, although many Democratic legislators would. I think it's much more likely that they would take out the scissors and start snipping away and cutting here and there in the state budget. But I'm not the governor. We're going to have to see.
Yeah. Charlie, you expect something like that may occur? I mean, one of the things they could do, I guess, is put a little less money into the pension funds. I mean, they've made a big deal that they have continued to make the typical payments to it, but I guess that's one of those things they could resort to as well. It's been done before.
Yeah, and you could do that, or you could dip into the rainy day fund if it were needed. And a lot of it will depend on how the legislature reacts, because unlike at the federal level, Governor Pritzker cannot just tell the lawmakers do XYZ and they'll bow and say, "Yes, master, yes, master." He's got to deal with Democratic constituencies in the Senate and the House, Democratic leadership that have their own ideas and their own priorities and what they want to do. And so there are things that could be done. Just as an example, how much money would the state realize if they were able to tax the hemp derivatives that are just as potent as marijuana itself and that are sold all across the state with no oversight, no quality control? And we tried to do it in the end of the last legislative session, and it was stopped. In the House wouldn't vote for the bill. And I can see that as an area where you work out some compromise and you raise money doing that. Or you can expand on some of the gaming that goes on. So there are options without directly affecting everybody in terms of how we can raise revenues. And as I said, I'm pretty sure that the governor is pretty committed to making the required pension payment, simply because if we renege on it or cut it back, that's going to affect our credit rating. And he has been very, very proud of the fact that we've had credit upgrades, and he's very intent on preserving that record. Sure. As a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, we had decent credit ratings. We're going to borrow money for Build Illinois, several billion dollars. And the credit rating agencies all gave us good marks for that this past week.
Well, let me turn to a couple of other issues. We can go through these pretty quickly here. But, Greg, you'd written about Chicago area transit authorities. They were looking at some money from the state. They're looking really at a major shift on how transit is done in the Chicago area. What is going on with that at this point?
Well, there is a proposal that has come out that was actually submitted in writing by the new U.S. Department of Transportation, saying that from now on they're going to the extent allowed by law, they're going to make grants based in part on whether an area is growing or not. And, well, Illinois is not adding people, whereas some place like Alabama and Georgia are. They just coincidentally happen to be red states. We happen to be a blue state. So as in the case of the Medicaid spending and where the federal budget cuts are going to be, whatever. The question is, to what extent do the Trump people follow what they're proposing here? But they indeed have pitched a change that, if it were to come through to fruition, would hurt the state rather badly. We would lose a ton of money for road work and other things.
So is something going to happen with this at the state level, possibly? Are they going to try to do something before the legislature adjourns in May?
I don't think so. A lot of, fortunately for Illinois, a lot of transportation money is formula. It's literally written into the law, and you would think that all of the Trump people have been creative. You have to follow those formulas. But other federal money is discretionary grants, and that's where the rubber hits the road, or not in this case. They would seem to have some ability to say, well, we've decided for whatever reason that this fine. The fine transportation district in Dallas deserves this money because they're adding people, and sorry, CTA, you're going to have to do without it.
Well, let's save just a couple of minutes here also to talk about Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson. Greg, I'll stay with you. He testified in Washington this week. He was called out there to testify to a committee about the sanctuary city policy of the city of Chicago. So how did he do before lawmakers?
He did okay. He didn't make any mistakes, which was the main thing. People on the committee really tried to bait him, and for the most part, he didn't take the bait. He had his talking points, and he kept stuck to them. The main one of which is Chicago is following the law. The law only requires you to cooperate in criminal cases when you have a judge that says somebody, an immigrant, needs to be seized, whereas the other stuff is all civil and it's discretionary. And he kept making his points. He could have been better. He didn't come up with this huge, eloquent religious and cultural reasons why we have to stand on our principles here. But he did all right and probably helped his political position back at home a little bit in so doing.
Charlie, you had a chance to follow what he had to say there as well. You think he did okay?
Yeah, I think he did. I'll confess I didn't watch all 6 hours of it. But reading the analysis from people who did, they basically gave him a decent grade. A B is what Eric Zorn gave him in his Picayune Sentinel. But the notion was, I think, that the rabid Republicans on this committee were out to waylay these mayors from these Democratic cities that are sanctuary cities. And they tried to bait Johnson, and he was able to resist the bait. And in essence, from my perspective, the Republicans weren't able to do what they tried to do, which was trying to paint these mayors as protecting criminals. And as a matter of fact, Johnson said flat out, if there's an arrest warrant for a criminal for committing a crime, we'll work with you. But we're not going to help you going after people kind of willy-nilly just because, in the words of the Republicans, they're illegal aliens, when in fact quite a few of them are folks, particularly the folks who came up from Texas, from Venezuela. They are here legally in that they are asylum seekers and they've been allowed to be in the U.S. while their request for asylum is being adjudicated. So as to you know, my bottom line is I think Brandon Johnson did very well. And my guess is that if you were to do a survey now, his approval rating would be a lot higher than the 6% in the most recent one.
And only about 30 seconds here or so. Greg, quickly, if you could, Chicago Bears owner Virginia McCaskey recently passed away. The Bears have been in the news a lot because not only are they the NFL team for the state of Illinois, and everybody follows that, I guess, but the other issue is where they're going to play in the future. They're looking for a new stadium. What's going on with the team ownership and with that stadium push? Is anything happening right now?
The short answer, Sean, is that they have financial problems. They need dough from somewhere, both for taxes and for the cost of a new stadium. And the longer they are unable to make any progress in Springfield and getting a subsidy for a stadium in Chicago, the greater the chances they're going to end up in Arlington Heights.
All right. Well, Greg, we'll stay with you. We'll go to our notes from the field.
Charlie is right that Johnson, who had all of a 7% approval rating in the last poll, is may have helped himself a little bit with his testimony this week, but anybody who's that low is going to attract all kinds of attention. There's lots of stuff going on behind the scenes. Most of it is still not public, but I think very soon that you will start to see some people and some fundraising efforts and whatever go public, because Johnson is definitely perceived as being vulnerable now.
And also, Governor J.B. Pritzker making a stop in Champaign this week. He's promoting his plan to limit cell phone use in K-12 schools. He outlined that during his State of the State and budget address last month. He says under his proposal, each school district would create their own policy for cell phone use by the start of the school year in 2026. He says students would not be allowed to use phones during class time, but there would be some exceptions, like if a phone is needed to monitor a medical condition. We'll see where that goes. And Charlie.
Well, if you recall, last fall we started a contest, if you will, to see whether or not we should keep our current state flag or replace it with something else. Well, Secretary of State Alexei Janulis announced this last week that of the 12 other flag choices, the vote for the current flag, to keep our current flag, about 43% of some 385,000 votes that were cast favored keeping the flag that we have now. And the commission that was created by a legislature to explore this question will now advise the General Assembly on how they should vote regarding a flag change. Legislators, of course, will have the final say on this. The current flag got more than 165,000 votes. The second place finisher had less than 33,000. So those people who were concerned enough or inspired enough or cared enough to vote said, let's keep the flag that we have now. So my guess is the legislature will say, okay, that's what we'll do.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Greg Hines with Crane Chicago Business. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.